And now on to today's introductions. I'm really delighted to be joined by Dr. Locke Chandler, a naturopathic physician and licensed acupuncturist who has been with Providence Integrative Medicine since 2004 and has served as the medical director of Providence Integrative Medicine since 2015. Dr. Chandler earned his degree from the National College of Naturopathic Medicine in 2001. And later in 2014, completed his Master of Public Administration with a focus on health administration at Portland State University. Dr. Chandler helps patients with a diagnosis of cancer minimize side effects of treatment and maximize quality of life as they go through treatment. He also has a focus in general naturopathic and acupuncture care for all ages. Dr. Chandler has frequently been invited to lecture and teach throughout the United States on integrative medicine and Chinese medicine, so it is a real delight for him to come and share his expertise with us today. Thank you.
Okay, so you have a patient, inpatient, 56-year-old male, has tremendous anxiety with a recent diagnosis of stage 4 cancer. He has been medicated or tried to have medications applied to him, but he gets sedated and he's sleeping all the time. And he says, I don't want that if I only have 3 to 6 months to live. So what are our options at that point? Or a 72-year-old female who has intractable nausea after one round of chemotherapy that happened 6 months prior. She has also tried different medications, been to different specialists to try and figure out what is the mechanism of action. So when our conventional care options aren't working for our patients, where do we turn? So with that, we'll consider acupuncture. So that we're going to talk about some of the historical acupuncture or the aspects of acupuncture. How does acupuncture work? A lot of people ask me, what's the mechanism of action? What's the data on acupuncture? How can it help our patients? And then some other aspects with regards to safety, insurance coverage, just some of the logistic aspects that you may get asked, or if you've had acupuncture that you may wonder about. So when we're talking about acupuncture, it involves placing thin surgical stainless steel needles into parts of the skin for the purpose of health and wellness. It started in China about 3,000 years ago, but the first documentation is in the Yellow Emperor's Classic of Internal Medicine from about 100 BCE. Before the Common Era, but it's been in the United States with immigration, so in the 1800s, but it's been around for what they imagine 5,000 years. And you could say, well, how did they know 5,000 years? And so that brings us to Otzi, or the Iceman, who was found in 1991 in the northern Italian Alps, so not in China, but in Central Europe, and in a melting glacier. And so he was a 45-year-old male, and he had a traumatic death, but what they noticed with the research is that he had these series of tattoos. He had 61 tattoos on his body that were typically three lines. Some of them were two lines and a couple were X's. And so the researchers were saying, this doesn't appear to be decorative tattooing. It appears to be therapeutic. And what they found is that they overlaid it with Chinese medicine channels or meridians, and there was almost a complete resonance with that. So they thought it was therapeutic that he was getting acupuncture, and this is 5,300 years ago. But how did it get to be in the United States? So part of the interest developed with Kissinger's trip to China, where he met with the premiers, Zhou Enlai, in 1971, July of 1971, in preparation for Nixon's trip in February of 1972. Now, the interest didn't really spark with Kissinger's trip because nobody knew about it until hindsight. But there was an article by James Reston, who was a columnist and editor for the New York Times and a Pulitzer Prize winner. And he had also been invited to China by the ambassador in London. And so he arrived in China on July 8th in 1971, where Kissinger arrived July 9th. Again, he didn't know about this, but then Kissinger left in July 11th. And when he got to Beijing, where Kissinger was, he found out that he had just missed him and that he missed this big break for this big story. But he was still there July 15th and he started having lower abdominal pain. This is the article. And he went to the hospital on July 16th and he was the doctors looked at him, and on the 17th, they gave him an emergency appendectomy. After his surgery, he had a lot of cramping, bloating, and gas, and they gave him an acupuncture treatment that involved just three needles, one in his right elbow and two below his knee. And so presumably there's a stomach channel right below the knee. And he said within about an hour that his pain resolved. And he was amazed by that. And so he wrote an article that was on the first page of the New York Times on July 26th of 1971, talking about his acupuncture experience. And so a lot of the media was amazed that China had been closed for 20 years, and this was the first incidence of American getting acupuncture. And so a lot of media at the time was thinking, wow, you know, Time, Newsweek, People magazine were all reporting the interest in acupuncture, and they talked about this acupuncture fever was sort of building. In concordance with that, we have Dr. Diamond, who presented this article on JAMA of December of 1971, talking about acupuncture anesthesia. It was met with a lot of skepticism, but a lot of physicians were thinking, interesting, people were doing acupuncture in addition to surgery and finding that they could reduce anesthesia or even without anesthesia for those who were sensitive to anesthetics. And so there was a lot of interest. So we had Reston's article come out, which sort of built the public knowledge, and then Diamond's article come out. And a lot of physicians started to travel to the East to learn acupuncture and bring it back, in addition to lay people. So that added to the acupuncture fever that they talked about. And so they would talk about busloads of people going to Chinatown and San Francisco and New York City. But then the acupuncture fever waned because some of those lay people not properly trained, maybe with a weekend course, didn't have as much success with acupuncture, and so it started to fade out. But alongside that, we also saw the Young Lords and the Black Panthers were using acupuncture at the Lincoln Detox in New York City with regards to helping people in recovery from addictions. And so all these pieces are going alongside each other. And we can see now that it's used worldwide. And you can see just with this acupuncture PubMed research, sort of that correlation of the data that's coming out with regards to acupuncture and how it's really peaked recently. Okay, you could say, okay, what's the association of acupuncture with Providence? Now, the Providence Historical Archives sent me this article years ago, and I came across it, and I actually sent it to somebody who knows how to translate French, Maren Faulkner, and so she was the translator for this, and she was translating this, the Materia Medica, who was created by two sisters of Providence in Montreal, Canada, Sister Peter Claver, who is a pharmacist and teacher of nurses, but also Sister Joseph Henry, who was the head of the Mother House printing office and who published this Materia Medica. And the purpose of the Materia Medica was to become a standardized sort of handbook that they could use to support in their writing, support the physician's decision making. And if the physician wasn't present, they could also take over care. So I imagine it was used a lot when they're on mission work. And because Sister Peter Claver actually helped co-found Seattle's Providence Hospital in 1877 and Walla Walla St. Mary Hospital in 1880. And so this, you can see this version is from 1870, and it mentions acupuncture in the translation. One also considers the voluntary introduction more or less methodical of one or several needles into the living tissue. If one adds an electrical current to this needling procedure, one is practicing electroacupuncture. So in 1870, the Sisters of Providence are using acupuncture in the care of patients. This one is from 1890. It's a little bit more involved, but it talks about using silver, platinum, steel needles. And what was interesting to me is the duration of time that they left them in, from several hours to even 2 days. I've never left a needle in for more than the treatment session myself. So to see them using it for 2 days was pretty amazing. And you can see the last bullet point, Sister Karen employed acupuncture with success in bringing drowned and asphyxiated people back to life. So evidently Sister Karen was skilled in acupuncture, but there are actually loss of consciousness points that to help revive people, which was interesting. And so again, this was a fascinating aspect for me to hear about the Sisters of Providence in the 1800s using acupuncture in the care of their patients. But to get into specifics, there are a few types. Japanese acupuncture is generally using a thinner needle, more superficially placed. So if you looked at it, the needle is often hanging off of the skin, just barely into the skin. Chinese acupuncture, you're typically using a thicker needle that's deeper placed, so it's going to be more perpendicular to the skin. Korean acupuncture, often using scalp and hands, so that's where they focus a lot of their treatment. As we mentioned with the sisters, the term electroacupuncture, that's where we're connecting the needles with an electric current. And the purpose of the electroacupuncture, which Dr. Diamond also talked about with the acupuncture anesthesia, is that that manipulates the needle, puts a subtle current that causes more of the chemical release, which we're going to cover a lot of the chemical release that acupuncture is causing. The electroacupuncture takes the place of the provider staying in the room and manually manipulating the needles to get the same effect. So they can just be present or leave the room for some of that enhanced acupuncture effect. Otherwise, acupressure, where you're using your hands on acupuncture points, thumbs, index finger, just to stimulate those points. Also laser treatments for different populations, perhaps pediatrics who are sensitive to needles or other people who are needle phobic who really don't want a needle placement. Laser acupuncture is a way on the acupuncture points to cause some stimulation. Tation is using a fine metal tool, which you can see the example here, where you're also just doing pressure onto those acupuncture points. It's not insertive with those tools, or moxa, or the burning of herbs. And that was what James Reston, he had those three needles, but also he had a moxa treatment with artemisia or mugwort over his abdomen as part of his therapeutic procedure. So today, though, we're going to talk mainly about Chinese medicine. So when we think about Chinese medicine, they have a key driver of philosophy, and it's Zhong Dao. And what that translates to is when the body's in balance, we have health. Now, this sounds a lot like probably a term that you may remember from biology 101. Any ideas? Homeostasis. Absolutely. So when we have homeostasis, we have equilibrium or no pathology. So very similar if we're looking at those two together. When we have balance, we have health. And they describe that we have this energy or vital energy flowing through us like rivers. They call it qi. And when we have the smooth qi flowing, that we have that optimal health. So that's the goal of the treatment, really, with acupunctures, or if we're using herbs, but in this case, acupuncture. If the qi is perceived to flow too slowly, we want to help speed it up. If it's flowing too fast, we want to slow it down. If it's flowing irregularly, we want to smooth it out, all to help people come back to balance. This is an example of what those charts look like. You can see the channels on the arms, the torso, the face, and the legs. We have classically 14 channels. There's three on the inside of the arm, three on the outside, three on the outside of the leg, on three on the inside, and then one center in the back, also a center one coming up over the top. Okay, so how does it work? This is where we're getting into the nuts and bolts. So it increases the acute chemical mediators of acute inflammation. So I give the analogy to patients as if I'm giving a splinter to your body. That's the perception of your body. It doesn't know it's a surgical stainless steel needle, but there's been an invasion, the skin's been broken, there's been some trauma to the skin that has triggered a release of chemicals. Those chemicals include histamine, serotonin, nitric oxide, bradykinin, capsaicin, ATP, etc. But it also secretes the endogenous opioids, including enkephalins, dynorphins, endomorphins. We know that that's a major role for acupuncture anesthesia because when we use naloxone, that blocks a lot of that effect. So we know the endogenous opioids are a main effect of how acupuncture is working. Also the polymodal receptors, releasing substance P, calcitonin-generated peptides, somatostatin. You know, again, components that are part of our inflammatory response. Also affecting the thick afferent nerve fibers, which inhibits signal transmission perceptively through the gate theory mechanism, just inhibiting some of the continual transmission to the central nervous system. Also the thin afferent, again, causing release of endorphins, serotonin, noradrenaline, but also changes to blood flow of the tissues and also regions of the brain. And so you can imagine some of these chemicals locally. So if we had a trigger point and we're doing acupuncture, we're causing a release of histamine and some of the opioids. So those are vasodilatory. So if a trigger point, hypertonic muscle, and we're causing chemical release, we can perhaps increase blood flow to that area to help that trigger point release and resolve. But also they found with MRIs, functional MRIs of the brain, when we do acupuncture before and after, they find that regions of the brain reporting pain, the blood flow is reduced. So when I'm talking with patients, I tell them it's like we're turning down the volume on your pain stereo. Another aspect is acupuncture is a parasympathetic inducing activity. And so it stimulates the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is part of the cholinergic anti-inflammatory pathway or the inflammatory reflex. So we need inflammation to a degree. Too much is not good, too little is not good. So the inflammation is needed for healing. That vagus nerve is like the brakes, the checks and balances on an overreactive immune system, help downgrading some of those inflammatory cytokines. And so part of the way that acupuncture works is to, again, downregulate some of those cytokines that are pro-inflammatory and helping a number of conditions that may be associated with that. Another aspect it's going to cause the release of adenosine triphosphate. And so when I cause some manipulation into the tissue, I'm causing some tissue damage in the connective tissue. That's going to cause a release of ATP. ATP is broken down into adenosine and other purines. ATP and adenosine bind to adenosine A1 receptors that then have an anti-nociception or pain reduction effect. So again, part of that trauma is releasing a number of chemicals in addition to mast cells. And so again, just why do we get histamine? It's because we're degranulating those mast cells. When we block the degranulation, we again see less of that acupuncture analgesia. And so there's another component that affects the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, lowering cyclooxygenase 2 and prostaglandins 2 that you guys are familiar with. And so putting those previous five slides into a diagram, this is really one of the mechanism summaries of how acupuncture works. And so you can see that we have in the leg or the hand, we have the acupuncture. Again, the manual acupuncture or electroacupuncture stimulation is causing the release of ATP, ATP broken down into adenosine, triggering the adenosine A1 receptor, causing pain inhibition. Similar to the previous mast cell slide, the TRP1 and 2 going to the dorsal horn, sort of that afferent pathway that then is going to the nervous system, the locus coeruleus, the arcuate nucleus, the periaqueductal gray, the nucleus rapid magnus, and then having efferent aspects of impact from the adrenals to downgrading COX-2, prostaglandins 2, to the release of serotonin and dopamine and the endogenous opioids. So this is sort of a summary of how it's impacting not only the afferent, but also the efferent pathways in the release of chemicals. And to me, a large part of the effect of acupuncture is due to the chemical release. There was one researcher who thought that he dissected out qi channels to find those pathways that the qi, the vital energy, is going, but no other researcher was able to corroborate his findings. So again, in my opinion, a lot of it, the majority, is biochemical. And as a result of that, it's difficult to do research. So how many of you have had acupuncture? Do you think you could tell if I was tapping a toothpick on you appropriately blinded, if we did a drape, maybe doing on the legs, or put a needle into you? You don't think you could tell, or you? Some people are nodding, shaking. So yes, I mean, so some people are like, yeah, I could probably tell if I got a needle versus just somebody tapping a toothpick on my skin. But that's the difficulty with sham acupuncture, because minimal acupuncture points also cause physiological changes. They'll often try to do a point like an inch away or on the opposite side. So one of the most studied points, which we'll cover, is pericardium 6. They often look at the other side, but we have channels on that side too. So if we're doing true needles, and a lot of what we just covered was biochemical, we're also going to have a biochemical release. And so you can see that they are summarizing that needle penetration into non-acu points can also cause stimuli to those same receptors that we are causing. And this is where the functional MRI have shown that skin or muscle stimulation of sham or classical may modulate pain through nerve activation. That is why sham or classical acupuncture often show no significance in comparative studies. And so I've been a part of grand rounds where, as an observer, and the provider was talking about acupuncture, was like, well, it's no different than sham study. It's like, well, and then I think about, well, there's a lot of it's biochemical. The sham was looking to have some impact too. And that's what we're often going to see with regards to the difficulty with studies. And so this is exemplifies that with regards to this functional MRI. And so you can see they're using sham treatments, but also true needles. And you can see A or B, one is sham, one is true needle. Can you tell the difference? You read it. I mean, you would see that the left is sham and the right is the genuine. And so we're still getting some stimulation of the parts of the brain. And the sham needle, this is called a Streitberger needle over here on the left-hand side. And so it's stuck onto the skin, all three. This is the true needle. This is the sham needle. The sham needle is like it's a Hollywood dagger. And so meaning that the handle will slide down, the needle will not penetrate. And so, but the needle as it slides down, or the handle as it slides down, it's coiled and it'll create a subtle vibration into the needle. And again, not only that stickum, but also that vibration can trigger mechanoreceptors in the skin. And that's what we're seeing, is like just sticking it onto the skin and sliding the handle down, it created some impact into the brain. Whereas the true needle that is using the same device just to create some blinding with people is creating this. This is an example of an electroacupuncture unit that we have I'm not sure what they were using, but they only used 2 points on the right hand for their study. Again, using sham that was connected to an electroacupuncture machine that lit up but had no current, and then another true one that put a current in. This is an example of acupuncture needles. The tabs on the top tell me how thick the needle is. So just for a visual gauge. And so the blue is 36 gauge, the pink is 34, the green is 38 gauge. And so they come in different lengths depending on what part of the body you are using. On the scalp, maybe it's a quarter inch, half inch needle. And through the buttock, you may be using 4-6 inch needle. Like the sisters talked about, they were using 4-6 inch needles. That is a long needle. These are all 1 inch needles. You can see on the bottom left, these are reproductions of bone needles. You can imagine historically, they were using bone for tools and using it for sewing needles. And so it probably wasn't a big step to go from a sewing needle once they developed acupuncture to using a bone needle. These are modern reproductions. You can buy them today if you wanted to. In the middle is a circa 1700 to 1900 needle, just using different gauges of needles. Acupuncturists would have to make their own needles. In the late 80s, it came out with these prepackaged, sterilized, mass-produced needles. So what can you imagine happened when we came out with these prepackaged, sterilized needles in the late 80s? What do you think was a positive effect? Any ideas? What do you think people have to do with their used again and again and again needles? Sterilize them. Right. And so what we saw, we'll cover in the safety, is the infection rates of acupuncture once the prepackaged, sterilized, mass-produced needles came out dropped drastically when they came out because of the difficulty with effective sterilization. This is just a comparison of the thicknesses off here from the human hair to an acupuncture needle, sewing needle, to an injection needle. So how can acupuncture help? Well, the data has been found to help with pain. So looking at all the chemicals released from the opioids to serotonin and dopamine, that we know that there's going to be some pain benefit. And we do see that neck pain, back pain, surgical pain, nausea and vomiting, fatigue, neuropathy, hot flashes, shortness of breath, headache, migraines, dental pain, labor pain, osteoarthritic pain, kidney stone pain, and some support with addiction. So moving into the data, Yuan et al. Looked at a meta-regression of sham-controlled, randomized controlled trials. And so what they found is, you can see with this forest plot, finding benefit with regards to the treatment versus the sham. This was an interesting study on the transcutaneous electrical stimulation. And this came out in just last year, meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials using this technique. So similar almost to a TENS unit, where it was non-insertive. It was just using these pads over acupuncture points. What they found is it can reduce postoperative pain, as well as the incidence of dizziness, nausea, and vomiting, and the use of analgesics, which we will see in the next slide. And so it's just, I like the last statement, multimodal management approach for postoperative pain potentially be considered. Now, it would be a great tool. You wouldn't have to be trained in acupuncture, just knowing where to place this as your multimodal approach to how can we help our patients as they're in recovery, potentially reduce analgesic use, but also to help with some of the other side effects of anesthesia. And so this is the forest plot looking at the analgesia use and consumption with our TEAS procedure. And so what they found with the TEAS, it also increased that anti-inflammatory reflex. And so helping downgrade some of the inflammatory cytokines, but also increased serotonin and norepi, which helped with gastrointestinal function and helped with nausea. And so that's how some of those chemicals are working with some of the ways that we're seeing with regards to nausea. And to give you a patient case, this is about a 55-year-old male who just had open radical prostatectomy. He knew he was going in, so he asked to get on the schedule for us. And so I was able to see him about 5 hours when he was still in recovery, so gave him an electroacupuncture treatment and gave him one more before he was discharged, I think 3 days later, so a total of 2 treatments. And he felt like his pain was less than expected, his nausea was minimal, and his gastrointestinal function seemed to return fairly readily. Now, this was actually a physician and a hematologist, and so he had had surgeries before where he didn't have acupuncture for various typically sports-related injuries. And so for him, it was noticeable about the effect of acupuncture that it had for him and his recovery. This is a about hot flashes and breast cancer. 72 women with breast cancer, randomized controlled trial, at least 3+ hot flashes, randomized to true or sham. And they had a total of 2 treatments a week for 4 weeks, so a total of 8 measured hot flash frequency baseline, 6 weeks, 6 months. And hot flash in the treatment group reduced from 8.7 to 6.2 per day, and in the sham group from 10 to 7.6. The researchers summarized, they both dropped, not statistically significant. But I highlighted the point, the sham point was an inch away. And so again, this is some of the challenge that we may say, okay, it's no better than sham. It doesn't seem to be effective. But in my opinion, looking at those chemical responses that we just covered, both were effective, both dropped. And so I think that we need to migrate away from sham controlled studies into standard care to get better data. So we're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Now, you might find this interesting. This was 50 women randomized to receive 12 weeks of acupuncture or venlafaxine, and both groups found a decrease in hot flashes, depressive symptoms, improvement in quality of life, and mental health. So acupuncture was as effective as Effexor. But 2 weeks post-treatment, the venlafaxine group had an increase in the hot flashes where the acupuncture group didn't. The venlafaxine group also had 18 minor adverse side effects noted of nausea, dry mouth, dizziness, and anxiety, where the acupuncture group didn't. The acupuncture group also had better energy, higher libido, better mental focus, clarity of thought. And so again, in summary, acupuncture as effective, but it seemed to have a reduction in adverse side effects that could be correlated. The Acclimate study, randomized controlled trial of 190 women with breast cancer, either acupuncture plus enhanced self-care or enhanced self-care alone. And the enhanced self-care was merely a book about how do hot flashes happen? What are some dietary recommendations, exercise recommendations? The acupuncture group had lower hot flash score, and also it persisted at 3 and 6 months, and also had fewer hot flash symptoms, higher quality of life, vasomotor, physical, and psychosocial. And this is looking at sort of that progression over time with the enhanced self-care group and the dotted blue line, and then the solid yellow line with the acupuncture plus enhanced self-care group, concluding that acupuncture with standardized and the care showed benefit with regards to hot flashes. So this is another patient case. I know some of the articles covering are about breast cancer, but it will work in women without cancer too, and this exemplifies that. This is a 53-year-old female, wanted to see if acupuncture would work for her hot flashes. It was disrupting her sleep, and so she was getting tired and just having mental focus issues. She was also doing an over-the-counter herbal remedy. She came and received acupuncture once a week for 4 weeks, and then she called me up and said, I don't think I need to continue. I'm sleeping better. I don't think I've got where I want to be. It's like, so sleep is good. My energy is coming back. And this is actually another physician who wanted to trial it and found benefit with regards to acupuncture. Now, what about the aromatase inhibitor associated myalgias, often associated with part of breast cancer treatment? This is a group, stage 1 to 3, ERPR positive, all on AIs. True acupuncture, again, smaller group scenes of 10 of 20, and then sham with N of 18. 2 times a week for 6 weeks, all had self-reported musculoskeletal pain related to their AIs, and all allowed to take non-narcotic, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. And the true acupuncture group, lower or worse pain scores, less pain severity, less pain-related quality of interference, and no adverse events reported. Now again, this was back in 2010, but a little bit more current in 2017, meta-analysis of RCTs evaluating acupuncture and aromatase-associated arthralgias, 5 trials, 181 patients, concluded that it was safe and viable non-pharmacological treatment that may relieve joint pain in patients with aromatase inhibitor-associated arthralgias. And to talk about that point, this is a 52-year-old woman with breast cancer, and she had been on her AIs for less than a year, and she came in and it's like, I am having a difficult time staying on my AIs. I don't know if I can continue. And she talked about that with her oncologist, and they were discussing options as a result of that. She's like, my sleep is disrupted. My energy is really low. I'm not motivated to exercise. I'm gaining weight because it's been a change in my activity level. And so she was having depression with that. And so she also came in for acupuncture, not weekly. It was the previous case. We were about every 2 weeks. She came in for a series, and after a series, that she said, wow, I am, you know, sleeping better. My aches and pain are less. So my energy is more. I've been a little bit more motivated. And so she saw that maybe I can continue. I don't have to stop the medication because we're getting relief here. And she saw the further benefit when she missed a treatment. She's like, my aches and pain came back, not as strong, but they did come back. So I realized the benefit that acupuncture was giving me. So migraines, I know a number of people come in for migraines, and this included 12 randomized controlled trials, almost 2,000 participants looking at acupuncture versus sham or placebo, and what they found is an increase in the rate of headache freedom and a reduction in headache intensity. So what you'll often find in acupuncture, it may not resolve things completely, but you could downgrade it to a level that then is more tolerable for the patient. And this is an example of that. A 33-year-old male presented to clinic with intractable migraines almost daily. And he started the Aimovig shot every month, and that helped. He started the NeuroLens prism glasses, and that also helped. And he started acupuncture, and what he felt is it also helped add to that multimodality approach that he was already doing. And so he found that it reduced the frequency and severity. So when he missed a treatment, similar to the previous case, that he noticed his headaches happened more frequently and the severity was higher. And so again, it's a multimodality approach to help manage our patients' health concerns. This study by Yang et al, so a meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials on anxiety. So they looked at 20 randomized controlled trials, almost 2,000 patients, so just over 1,800. They were all done in China and they were all designed for patients with generalized anxiety disorder. So you can see the forest plot trending towards the positive. And so what they found is acupuncture was more effective than control in reducing symptoms with anxiety. So again, going back to those mechanisms of action that we reviewed, it would make sense if somebody was having anxiety and we're releasing more opioids, we're releasing more serotonin, we're releasing more dopamine, we're helping with the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. And so just that's sort of that internal environment to think about that is going on when we see some of these studies and the mechanism of action that is at play. To go back to that initial patient that I mentioned, that 56-year-old male inpatient. And so to put yourself in, sort of get a better idea of what he is going through, he had recently retired 3 months prior. He bought a motor home and a boat, and he and his wife were going to travel the United States like they had always dreamed of doing. He started having abdominal pain and he goes into the hospital and they're not sure why he's having the abdominal pain. And they did sort of investigative laparoscopic surgery, and he was, what he said, an open them up and then close them up. Because what they found is widespread carcinomatosis of unknown origin, thought to be pancreatic. And he was at that time given a diagnosis of prognosis of 3 to 6 months. So imagine how your life would do a 180 from retirement and traveling the United States to you have 3 to 6 months to live. His anxiety was severe and he was always calling the nurses, just wanting to talk to his doctor or the nurses to get more pain medication. What he found is that when his anxiety was reduced, he was sleeping all the time. And he just didn't want to do that if he had such a short time to live. The social worker who I knew called down and said, can you see him? Can you give him a treatment? And so I did, and I gave him 4 treatments just over a week. So it's 3 treatments 1 week and then another treat at the beginning of the next. And what they said is he was a changed man. And he just was able to then be medicated, not to the level that would sedate him, but he didn't need as much that then brought some relief. So interrupting some of that inflammatory pathway, maybe downgrading some of those inflammatory cytokines that were related with maybe the carcinomatosis. And so helping with serotonin and dopamine and the endogenous opioids to help with that. Sciatica, another common patient complaint. This was by Han et al. Acupuncture, a systematic review and meta-analysis, 25 randomized controlled trials, 2,700 patients. And they looked at the synthesized visual analog scale of 7 RCTs and significantly reduced in the acupuncture group compared with the analgesic group. And the total effective rate significantly higher in the acupuncture group versus the analgesic group. And oftentimes what I'll find in sciatica is that the glute medius muscle or the piriformis muscle or the external hip rotator muscles are hypertonic, and the acupuncture point is right into sort of that piriformis area is sort of the standard point that they do in addition to glute med. And so you can imagine, again, we're relaxing that muscle, maybe enhancing blood flow to create some release. But that is one of the treatments that was used, is to use that gold standard point But I found success with sciatica doing electroacupuncture to that area to release the hypertonicity that may be impinging that sciatic nerve. Insomnia. Another common complaint, randomized controlled trial looking at electroacupuncture versus gabapentin. N of 58 randomized to 8 weeks of acupuncture, so they received 10 treatments or gabapentin at 900 milligrams, evaluated with the Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index. And what they found is improved sleep duration, less sleep disturbance, shorter sleep latency, decreased daytime dysfunction, improved sleep efficiency, and better sleep quality compared with baseline. So this is looking at their results. I just did a quick research against Ambien, and Ambien was also found to be, acupuncture is found to be effective versus Ambien also. Nausea. So this is an older study, 1997, and I included it for a reason as its historical importance. And so they looked at 2,300 research articles, almost over 30 years, and they summarized. So you can, going back to Reston, and so we had the acupuncture fever from James Reston, and in the media, 1971, going up, and then it sort of faded away. But it started to rise, the interest in acupuncture again in the 90s, because people were interested in complementary and alternative medicine. And so then the NIH came out with this consensus statement and said, we reviewed a lot of articles. It's safe, difficulty with sham, and difficulty with controls, like we've talked about. But it's good for chemotherapy-induced nausea, but also nausea secondary to anesthesia, and also nausea secondary to pregnancy. And that was their summary, really those three positions. And they, as they acknowledged, difficult to, or consistent between different investigators, different patient groups, different forms of stimulation over time and over years. This was looking at acupuncture and ondansetron in prevention of delayed chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting in patients with gynecological cancers, N of 70, randomized to acupuncture at pericardium 6, which we'll cover. I'll show you where it is, because you've got two of them. And they also received it the next day, or ondansetron 8 milligrams IV 30 minutes before chemo infusion, and it was a crossover for their next chemotherapy infusion. All received DEX, and they were given additional doses of ondansetron if they needed to. The acupuncture had complete resolution at 52.8 versus 35.7 in the ondansetron group. Lower delayed nausea, lower nausea score, fewer doses of additional oral ondansetron, less adverse side effects, better quality of life on the functional assessment of cancer therapy general. So this study looked at acupressure. So if you don't have a needle, doing acupressure by Roscoe, and he did subsequent studies too, using the wristbands, the C-bands that you can find at Rite Aid, Walgreens, for motion sickness, plane, train, boat. And so they had three groups. One group used the pericardium 6, 46% reported nauseousness. One used sham. This is also in preparation for chemotherapy, anticipatory nausea. One used the sham point on the opposite side, so also an acupuncture point, but 68% reported nausea, and one received no treatment, and they reported 73% nausea. So the acupressure wristband group, appropriately placed, had less nausea and took less anti-nausea medication. So here's the location of the point. 2 inches proximal from your wrist crease, midline, between the flexicarpi radialis and palmaris longus tendons. So on both sides. This is the most studied point in acupuncture literature, is pericardium 6. This is because it's typically looking at nausea. And so they taught people how to do it in some of the studies, like a nurse, and the nurse did it with the patient. They had less nausea, took less anti-nausea medication. They taught caregivers how to do it, like family members, friends, and they had less nausea and took less anti-nausea medication. And so again, useful for nausea. Going back to that case I presented earlier, that 72-year-old female who had chronic intractable nausea after only one round of chemotherapy. She couldn't do any more chemotherapy because it was a treatment-limiting side effect. It happened 6 months prior. She had been to a number of specialists, tried a number of medications, still nothing would change. She was losing weight. She was getting depressed. She was not leaving her home because she didn't want to go out and start having heaving episodes. She came in and we gave her three treatments over a period of 4 weeks, and the nausea was much better. Now, some of you may say, well, maybe it was coincidence. Maybe the nausea would have stopped after 6 months anyway. As we always say, correlated or coincidence. But what would happen over the next few years, that the nausea would return, not as much as it was, but then she'd come back for a series of treatments and then it would resolve. So it probably took about 5 years of this. I would see her every 3 to 6 months of giving her some acupuncture, and then it finally reached a resolution. Okay, so I've given you some cases. Is acupuncture safe? Yes, when performed by a properly trained provider. A study of 574 British acupuncturists involving almost just over 34,000 concluded acupuncture safe. Whenever you put a needle into the skin, you're always at risk for infection or bleeding or nerve damage if improperly placed, allergic reactions, pneumothorax. And so you have to have awareness. Who are you doing the needling to? You're not going to use a 3-inch needle, perhaps on a woman who's 80 years old on her back and going straight in. That wouldn't be wise. But so it's all about which needle are you going to use in which location. Almost 100,000 patient acupuncture visits in Germany. Only 6 potentially serious adverse events were reported: needling pain, hematoma, and bleeding. So as we initially covered some of those, the research supporting data with pain, nausea, and vomiting, and it goes on from some of the aspects that we covered in addiction. And so it's beneficial with smoking cessation, not typically as a standalone, but as an adjunctive therapy with a multimodality approach to help with people for the same reasons that we saw with regards to the chemical aspect: serotonin, dopamine, endogenous opioids. So helping with withdrawal, but also craving control. What you may expect, what I tell patients is, as if I take one hair, gave it a slight tug, it may pinch like that, but usually fades. If it doesn't fade, let me know and I can adjust the needle, which will typically resolve it, or I'll pull it out. And so there is just variation with people. It shouldn't be painful. I have some patients who said, well, my acupuncturist told me that's got to be painful. If it's not painful, it's not doing anything. Well, I can tell you, in over 20 years of work, I haven't found that pain is the necessary ingredient to have acupuncture be effective. Sensations that patients have reported: nothing to a buzz, to tingle and itch. You can imagine the itch is there with the histamine response, to like a breeze. People sometimes describe it, it feels like there's a drip. Is there blood dripping or a breeze flowing? It's like, nope, there's nothing there, just the needle. Retention time is usually 20 to 30 minutes, either supine or prone in a treatment area. It could be seated depending on the patient's needs. 3 to 5 treatments is recommended as a trial. I've had some patients where, you know, do one treatment and I don't see them again. I run into them a couple of years later, maybe they come back for another issue. It's like, you know, I saw you for this hip pain. This is one patient. And she's like, well, acupuncture didn't work. It's like, oh, I just had one treatment. You had 2 to 3 years of workup by different orthopedists and everything, imaging procedures, and I get one acupuncture treatment to make it better. And so realistic expectations is a part of it, and just saying, okay, we want to try at least 3 to 5 to see, and that will usually give us a window into if it's going to be effective or not. When I find that it's not effective, like with a knee pain or a shoulder pain, I often find that there's a structural issue, meaning that I'll often see improvement, but then degradation again of their pain. It's like, what is going on? Is there a labral tear? Is there a meniscal tear? And oftentimes there is when it helps but doesn't resolve. And acupuncture is considered a third of the treatment. So it's not typically, again, going to be the only thing. What are the other things we're going to do with diet and lifestyle or physical therapy or whatever it is that we're going to add to their multimodality approach? Some insurance does cover acupuncture, others don't. It can be limited by condition, like the Oregon Health Plan. You know, typically spinal, neck pain, back pain, depression, migraines, smoking cessation. That's pretty much what they're going to cover. And other health plans have some limitations too. So you want to know your health plan. Providence's will cover 12, but some plans are different than that. And best to call and see. What's the training? Typically a 4 years master's or doctorate level program, like mine was about 3,500, and now it's down to 3,400 hours of training. Then you need to pass the National Certification Commission for Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine, the NCCAOM, which allows you to get licensed in Oregon. So you get your diploma, you pass your boards, you can get licensed in Oregon. MDs, DOs, they can do training through the Helms Institute is a common one down in Berkeley, California. It's a 300-hour certification course. There's some other programs that are offering for advanced practitioners and getting acupuncture. You can see that this example, what do you notice in this picture here? Those are left in tiny gold needles, hundreds. So this was done by a not properly trained provider. This is a 65-year-old woman. She had arthritic pain and she went into the acupuncturist and they gave her these leave-in needles. And as you can imagine, having hundreds of needles into your tissue did not help her arthritic complaints. So what's it by the numbers? There's 7,800 employed acupuncturists. There's 9 here with integrative medicine here in Providence. The total number of licensed acupuncturists in the United States is somewhere between 38 and 40,000. 5,000 of those are physicians. The majority are in California and New York. So almost 50%. So 44% are within California and New York alone. Most in urban areas, 1,200 licensed acupuncturists here in Oregon. 10 to 15% federal funding on complementary alternative medicine goes to acupuncture. In hospitals, acupuncture is typically the number one therapy that they're going to offer. So Memorial Sloan Kettering, MD Anderson here at Providence, a big part of what we do within our clinic is acupuncture. Estimated to have been 10 million treatments in 2014, and 86% of randomly surveyed patients reported by Lee showed that acupuncture helped. And so again, I don't know the number that he surveyed or the mechanism, but just from that article. You can put in a referral or patients can call in. We do inpatients, but we're not like PT, OT, RT, where you can call in and get service provided that day. We are often booked out weeks, if not months. And so if somebody knows that they're gonna have a procedure, like that 55-year-old male, it's like, hey, I'm gonna have surgery on this date. Do you have any openings that you can book me in to get acupuncture while I'm an inpatient? This is our team, sort of covering both sides. These are our locations, East and West, Suite 338. Some websites from Memorial Sloan Kettering to the NIH, and some books that some people have appreciated knowing more about acupuncture. And so in closing, who knew that from an emergency appendectomy in Beijing, China in 1971, that we would be where we are here today with 38 to 40,000 licensed acupuncturists in the country, and 7,800 within that are employed, and again, 9 here at Providence, but starting with those Sisters of Providence who were using acupuncture in the 1800s. And as many research articles end, we need better data. And so I would say that also we need continued science and data. And I hope today that we enhance your knowledge about the use of acupuncture, the mechanisms of action, and how it can be helpful for your patients. Thank you.
Great. Dr. Chandler, thank you so much for your insights on this topic. I'm curious if we have any questions here in the live audience.
Hi, thank you for that talk. So for those sham studies, how did they recreate the needle like retention time or having like multiple needles at once?
And so that is one of the challenges. So with the sham, they often will do not all sham needles. They'll do a couple on the what they think are the points that are the therapeutic points. And so the retention time is going to be the same. So I did a sort of a study out of partnered with MD Anderson, where we had a sham needle similar to the Streitberger. It was a Hollywood dagger-like needle, and it also had a holding apparatus. So whether it was true needle or the sham needle, it was sort of the same in these active points. And then there was true needle body points. And that is one of the challenges. It's like, how do we separate or sort of define this process that we are creating sham when we are doing true needles elsewhere that is also, again, having that biochemical response? So retention time is often the same, but it's not typically done all the treatment points are not typically the sham needles.
Great, thank you. I have another question here. So thank you so much for both the discussion of the challenges of sham procedures and also for a discussion of some of the chemical explanation for effectiveness of treatment. And curiosity about your impression and experience for the importance of perhaps healing presence or just the fact that people are going for visits seems to be multiple modalities by which acupuncture might be effective, and curious your thoughts on actions outside of the chemical reactions in the body.
Well, I always think that the healing presence is going to be a component of care. I mean, just because we find that. I mean, there is data saying, you know, the patient's perception of their provider. you know, if they have a positive regard, they have better outcomes than if they have a negative or antagonistic regard. And so the longer I've been in practice, I always feel like I could do the same points almost on every person, and each person would interpret it differently because of that connection that we have on that humanistic side, for sure.
Great, thank you. And a question just coming through online that I'll take a look at. What is the likelihood and timeline for nerve damage recovery due to acupuncture, especially around the knee area?
Oh, I mean, that's a good question. So when I think about nerve damage, I often look at the stroke data, and typically we're within that 1 to 2 year window of the majority of healing. But again, properly placed, it shouldn't be an issue, but granted we have anatomical variability, and so that can be a challenge. And so hopefully it's not permanent, and that you'd like to see some recovery, but I would say individualistic in the level of trauma that was done. Good question.
Thanks for this great talk. Speaking of the knee, I have, you know, a handful of patients who can't go for their total knee, and they wind up coming to clinic about every 3 to 4 months, really wanting knee injections. Mm-hmm. And of course, the literature says not to do that and to instead do all the things, the water therapies and physical therapy. And I send them off to do that, and they want to come back for their knees. And I've wondered if it's placebo or healing presence. I've wondered if I'm really doing something good for them with that, you know, aspirate and inject a steroid. And now I'm wondering if it's all nociceptive and could be done by an acupuncturist. So what are your thoughts or data on osteoarthritis in the elderly?
And so, yeah, there is some data on osteoarthritis, especially of the knee. And I would say I've had a number of patients who were going to get surgeries, and we used acupuncture, and I did electroacupuncture right around the knee, and it bought them time. And so it bought them potentially years. Now we're typically looking at other aspects too, like acupuncture is a third. And so the other two thirds, so it's like, how are they eating? Could they maybe improve diet, maybe less potentially irritating, inflammatory causing foods like Western diet, standard American diet, potentially more of the Mediterranean-ish sort of lean meats, et cetera, diet. And so it's usually a blended approach, but acupuncture can be effective as a tool to mitigate some of that pain response. I would say, no, I mean, I think that there is a component of that. And so my dad, who's a hematologist, you know, he has talked about sort of pain reduction with people that just injecting normal saline into an area. And that's actually a form that I didn't cover, is aquapuncture, where they're actually injecting sort of a solution, oftentimes B12, but could be water. And it's creating pressure on sort of that acupuncture point when you're doing it to acupuncture points that then is causing stimulation. So doing the needle, you are causing some of those same chemical releases, that same sort of micro trauma, fascial trauma, and maybe some of that nociception aspect. So I would say yes.
Thank you so much. And I think you covered this to some extent in the talk, but just for any further clarification, does transcutaneous nerve stimulation work like acupuncture?
Yeah, I mean, so from the TEAS study, which is why I wanted to include it, is it seemed to result in the same anti-inflammatory pathway stimulation, the anti-inflammatory reflex, or the inflammatory reflex downgrading the cytokines. And so it was interesting because it was placed on acupuncture points. So I wonder if with our TENS population, could we get different results potentially? And again, I haven't seen any studies, but if we did it actually on acupuncture points versus just where your pain is.
Great, thanks so much. Another question. So as general internists, it's so helpful to know who to refer our patients to and what to tell them to expect. So thank you for including information about coverage. Just wondered, any specific advice to help people find acupuncture treatment in the community?
So yeah, there are the sort of lower cost community acupuncture, typically in sort of lazy boy chairs. So it's a group acupuncture setting, which it can be sort of $15 to $20, $25 sort of sliding scale, which can be more affordable for patients for sure, especially if they're Medicare. Unfortunately, Medicare doesn't cover acupuncture, which you'd think that population would benefit some of the most. And so hopefully one day that it will cover better. But really, one of the points to ask for is just what condition are you going for, and talk to the acupuncturist, and what's your experience with this? And so, like for some of my patients, like if they're in Salem or on the coast, it's like, well, who treats, you know, neuropathy secondary to chemotherapy? It's like, I don't know anybody, just ask them. And so it's just because I have a lot of experience with it and just somebody else may not have seen it at all.
Great, and here another clarifying question from online. There are patients who are very interested in acupuncture and those who are apprehensive. Any tips that you have in talking with patients who may be skeptical and you believe this could be a great option for them?
Well, that's a great question. And I do a lot of navigating with people who are needle phobic. And I would say invariably at the end, people are like, oh, that wasn't so bad. And so I think part of it is just the education about how it's supposed to feel. And that's why I don't say pain. I just say it's no worse than if I gave your one hair a slight tug. So that helps them put it in parameters of what they're going to expect. And I say, just let me know. Keep me posted how things are going. We can just do one at a time. And so, and just helps them when they have control over how much we are doing. So it just gives them that autonomy for being a part of the treatment.
Any other thoughts or questions here in the room?
Thank you, Locke, for a great talk. Paul Yu Tan here.
Yeah.
Just a plug for the Helms Clinic. The course, I did that about 15 years ago, and it's been a wonderful component to my medical practice, bringing that acupuncture in. A question, I work at Providence Elder Place now, a lot of frail older folks. If they're stuck in the hospital, let's say, for whatever chronic issue it may be, and I want to have them see you or one of your team, is, you know, let's say they've been in there for chronic nausea, just can't get better. Do you have any acute services available to them?
So not, I mean, that's the challenge is, you know, we don't have that. We're trying to create at least some dedicated time, like maybe it's half day in the morning a week, half day in the afternoon a week, where we can try and sort of get the word out to providers and let them know that if people are needing this inpatient, that these are the blocks that we can work them in. Right now, we don't have that, but one of our providers wants to take that on for next year as sort of their project to try and be able to get that service readily available to people. So,
great, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, great. I think we are coming right up at the top of the hour. Just want to remind everybody here in the room and our audience online that we will be taking a winter break and resuming Grand Rounds in person here at St. Vincent on Tuesday, January 9th. So please come back then. And thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Dr. Locke Chandler.
You bet. Thank you all.